Good morning, bom dia. Senhor Ministro dos Assuntos Europeus e Negociador-Chefe para a Adesão à União Europeia da Turquia, Sr. Egemen Bajis, Srs. Componentes, membros da Delegação da Turquia, caros colegas, tendo sido feitas as apresentações, eu gostava de começar por dar as boas-vindas ao Parlamento Português, à Assembleia da República, em nome da Comissão de Assuntos Europeus, e de dizer que é com o maior gosto que aqui recebemos o Sr. Ministro e esta delegação da Turquia. Temos também entre nós um representante do Grupo Parlamentar de Amizade Turquia-Portugal. Gostava de dizer-lhe que o deputado Raul Almeida, penso que as apresentações foram feitas já, repito, o Sr. Vice-Presidente da Comissão, o Sr. Deputado João Serpa Oliva, depois do Partido Socialista, os Srs. Deputados Vitalino Canas e Paulo Pisco, do CDS, o Sr. Deputado José Lino Ramos, e do PSD, o Sr. Deputado João Lobo. Gostava de dizer que a Comissão a que presido tem como missão acompanhar justamente os assuntos europeus, acompanhar o processo de construção europeia e a participação de Portugal na integração europeia, incluindo também as negociações para adesão. Nesse sentido, tem dado parecer, tem-se pronunciado sobre o decurso de negociações e os pedidos de adesão e os instrumentos relativos à adesão de novos Estados-membros da União Europeia. Para nós, gostava de registar, é particularmente relevante também a candidatura de um país como a Turquia, que é uma democracia islâmica, no mundo islâmico, e que se situa num lugar do mundo, como os recentes acontecimentos têm vindo a demonstrar, numa posição-chave, uma posição fulcral. Gostava de dizer que sabemos que o processo de candidatura e negociação por vezes é complicado ou demorado, esperamos que esse decurso do processo de negociação não tenha consequências na atitude da Turquia em relação à União Europeia. A posição que tem sido manifestada na Comissão penso que é a posição do Estado português tem sido tradicionalmente uma posição de abertura em relação a novas candidaturas. Portugal tem manifestado tradicionalmente essa abertura, que se estende também ao caso da Turquia, desde que sejam preenchidas as condições necessárias e indispensáveis para a adesão. Poderemos um pouco falar disso depois, mas eu para já, antes de passar a palavra ao Sr. Ministro, gostava de passar a palavra aos membros da Comissão para darem as suas boas-vindas e seguidamente, não sei, Sr. Deputado João Lobo, em nome do PSD, se pretende usar a palavra. Muito bem. E depois, seguidamente, para já, para dar as boas-vindas. Só. Para já.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente da Comissão de Assuntos Europeus. Gostaria de saudar também o representante do Grupo de Amizade Portugal-Turquia e, em representação do Grupo Parlamentar do PSD, dar as boas-vindas ao Sr. Ministro dos Assuntos Europeus e negociador-chefe de adesão para a adesão à União Europeia da Turquia. Sem prejuízo de uma posterior intervenção, era isto para já que eu pretendia referir. Saudar também todos os membros que acompanham o Sr. Ministro em representação da Turquia. Muito obrigado.
Em nome do Partido Socialista, Sr. Deputado Vitalino Canas.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Também uma curta saudação de boas-vindas. Tive a oportunidade de encontrar o Sr. Ministro na minha última visita à Turquia, onde já se trocaram impressões sobre a adesão da Turquia e assuntos importantes. Teremos a oportunidade daqui a pouco de continuar essa conversa, mas em nome do Partido Socialista agradecemos a sua presença e gostaríamos que esta visita corresse bem. Muito obrigado.
Do CDS-PP, Sr. Deputado João Sérgio Bolívar.
Pois, reiterando os cumprimentos anteriormente feitos, em nome do CDS, é um partido de gênese democrata cristã, apresentar-lhe os nossos cumprimentos e, como foi já aqui dito, que esta reunião sirva para que a adesão da Turquia venha a ser concretizada num espaço de tempo mais ou menos longo ou curto, consoante os eventos políticos que correrem. Muito obrigado.
Em representação do Grupo Parlamentar de Amizade Turquia-Portugal, Sr. Deputado Raul Almeida.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Cumprimentar, em primeiro lugar, e dizer o quanto é um prazer este reencontro com o Sr. Ministro. Cumprimentar toda a delegação e, em nome do Grupo Parlamentar de Amizade Portugal-Turquia, dar-vos as boas-vindas, desejar o maior sucesso nesta visita e que esse sucesso seja mais um passo em direção à adesão plena da Turquia, que nós, como Grupo de Amizade, muito gostaremos de ver no futuro fazer parte da União Europeia e que a missing star, a estrela que falta, venha a compor as estrelas da União Europeia.
Sr. Ministro, por favor.
Well, thank you very much for this great hospitality. It's very comforting to see different political parties together and to see that they're all friends of my country, and it makes one feel very much at home in Lisbon. I thank all of you for taking the time to meet with me. I was here a year ago and we had a similar exchange, and I hosted some of you back in Ankara and Istanbul during your visits. I have to admit, Portugal is one of the countries that the Turkish nation, people on the street, feel very close to. We have very similar attitudes towards life. Our approaches are very much similar. And I felt that during the last 2 days when I was in Lisbon. I received a great welcome, and I had a chance to meet with the President of the Republic, the Prime Minister, the Foreign Minister, members of Parliament from different political parties, and I also had a chance to meet with a variety of different people from arts, from business, from different walks of life, and I really enjoyed the sincere friendship. Throughout history, we have always respected each other and we have cooperated. But vis-a-vis my portfolio, Turkey's aspirations to become a member of European Union, Portugal has been a staunch supporter. I remember when President Barroso was Prime Minister, that was back in 2002 when we first came to Portugal. Since then, all previous governments with different political parties in government have had a very similar policy towards Turkey's accession negotiations, and that has been a positive policy. And we appreciate that. But as you mentioned, Mr. President, that negotiations take time. Your country knows that very well. You spent a lot of time, and you had to deal with a lot of difficulties while you were trying to negotiate the Portuguese membership to EU. But ours is a little bit longer than usual. We have applied 53 years ago. Our first 45 years went by without even getting a date to start the accession negotiations. Only in 2004, Turkey was given a date. And as of 2005, we are in the negotiation process. Since then, we have opened 13 of the 33 chapters. There are 20 more chapters to be opened, but 17 of them are politically blocked. So we cannot open them even if we want to. The blocks happily do not come from Portugal, but 8 of them are blocked by a decision of the Council because of the dispute over Cyprus and the Ankara Protocol. but the Greek Cypriot administration has announced that they would veto the opening of 6 other chapters in addition to those 8. There are some chapters that President Sarkozy felt like blocking, and he has announced that he would veto the opening of 5 chapters. We're yet in the process of convincing the new French government not to continue with the silly attitude of the previous government, but we still have to see. But despite all that, we would consider that we are at least 65% to 70% in line with the EU acquis. So the fact that majority of the chapters are blocked has not stopped our reform process. We have passed more than 200 laws in the last 9 years from our parliament. More than 1,600 secondary legislation has been enacted. And all these are trying to bring Turkey's standards to EU standards and make our country in line with the EU acquis. And we consider this to be a win-win platform. We become a much more democratic, transparent, and prosperous country as we take these steps, and EU is gaining a much more dependable ally that has similar rules and regulations. So the difficulties of the political blocs would only motivate us, and we will try to keep our determination alive. But you're all politicians. You know public opinion does matter. And I have to be very frank with you. At times, it's becoming more and more difficult to keep that motivation because people want to see results. And when you cannot open the chapters, although you comply with all the opening benchmarks of those chapters, people feel that they are not welcomed in this union, in this club. And that's a very dangerous, tricky situation. On one hand, we have to keep the reforms going. On the other hand, we are losing the public opinion, and it's very difficult to push. And at a time when EU is going through one of the worst economic crises of the last century, on top of that, Turkey being mistreated by some countries, it's very hard to keep the public support behind the process. Therefore, we are grateful to countries like Portugal who are still supporting us. And that's the main reason of my visit. The reason I came this year is to thank Portugal for the support that you are sharing with us and ask for the continuation of that support. We do not anticipate becoming a member tomorrow. We know, as the President said, it's going to take time. And we know the biggest obstacle is prejudice. Some people have prejudices against Turkey because predominantly my nation belongs to a different faith than the majority faith of Europe. But Europe is not a club of a single religion. Europe is a club of values, values that have brought us together for more than 60 years in NATO. If we are good enough to die for the same values like democracy, human rights, free market economy, and so forth, which are NATO principles, it's the same principles of EU which we should be good enough to live with as well. So we're trying to convey that message to our other allies in Europe. Some people have prejudices because of our population. Yes, we have a population of 75 million people, and our median age is 29, so we are one of the youngest nations in Europe. But that's also an advantage because at this time of economic ambiguity, it's a huge market of 75 million. But more importantly, it's a hub to a bigger market of 1.5 billion because within 3 hours of flying from Istanbul, one can reach a huge market of 1.5 billion, which is very important. And that was one of the things that Minister Portas and I spoke about, how to cooperate and how to enhance the cooperation of Turkish companies and Portuguese companies in third markets. And our Minister of Economy is looking forward to coming here as your Minister of Economy was in my country back in July. And we are trying to find means of cooperation because both countries are trading nations. And both countries are active global players. This is in our genetic code. And we can recreate this cooperation of the past again in terms of trade as well. As far as our population, and our strength, I think our military capabilities are very important. We have the second largest military in NATO, the largest in Europe today. And at a time when there's a turmoil in the Middle East, I think Turkey plays a very crucial role. I will be very open with you. There are many Muslim leaders today around the world from different countries who can go to Libya or Egypt and pray with the local people and give them messages that would connect vis-a-vis culture and religion. And there are many Western leaders who can go to the very same countries and preach them about democracy and secularism. But there are not too many who can do both. When Turkey's prime minister goes to Cairo at 2 o'clock in the morning, 20,000 people greet him at the airport, not because he's a handsome man, but because he represents what they are trying to achieve in their country. He's democratically elected. He has been elected 3 times in a row, and he has tripled his citizens' per capita income. He has tripled the roads and highways and airports and hospitals and schools, and they see that it is possible to have culture of Islam and culture of democracy work together and create a better life for the people on the street. But after attending a Friday prayer in a mosque in Libya, he can come out and speak to a group of 30,000 people who have gathered there to listen to him, and he can tell them, don't be afraid of secularism. Being secular doesn't mean you have to abandon your religion. Being secular actually ensures individuals to practice their religion of choice as much as they want to practice that religion. And the EU reforms are the most important element in making Turkey such a strong democracy with tolerance to different walks of life, different faiths, different cultures, different languages, different religions. In my own country, people were afraid to admit their identity, their ethnic identity 15 years ago. And now we have 24 hours of broadcasting on state television in different dialects, in different languages. And people of different faith can enjoy their religion much more freely than the past. The monastery in the Black Sea coast of Sumela was used after a gap of 88 years, and it's being used consecutively for the last 3 years. The Armenian Church of Akdamar was closed for 112 years, and it's been open for the last 3 years. All those are developments that Turkey presented in our attempts to have the EU standards. But at the meantime, the majority, the 90% of the society belong to Islamic faith, and they had difficulty sometimes practicing their own religion because of misinterpretation of secularism or laicism, and those also have been resolved, and people are free to be religious or not. And I think a country like Portugal would understand us the most because you went through similar periods in your history. Periods where democracy was not as strong as it is today. But you overcame them, and with your support, we are overcoming our difficulties. I am not claiming Turkey is perfect. We still have issues. But today's Turkey is much better than yesterday's Turkey. And I assure you, tomorrow's Turkey will be even greater than today's Turkey. And we are counting on the continuation of your friendship. Thank you for your hospitality. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Mr. Minister, thank you very much for your speech. I would like to, before giving the floor to my colleagues, say to you that, as you said, Portugal is traditionally an open country towards adhesions, and in specifically towards Turkey's adhesion. And I would even say Portugal is also satisfied of registering, of seeing that even in times of crisis in some parts of the European Union, there is an interest in the adhesion. I would say that it would not be a pleasant development if the time of the negotiations would put in question, or would affect the motivation, would decisively affect the motivation for the adhesion. As you know, the European Union is a plural union. There are different sensibilities, there are different points of view. I fully agree with you that we have to fight prejudices towards the size of the youth of the country or towards faith. I think these elements, on the contrary, as you said, would enrich the European Union. And I fully agree with what you told us about the crucial role that Turkey plays and can play still more in that part of the world. I would like to put you a very specific question before passing the floor to my giving the floor to my colleagues, and it concerns specifically Portugal has no interest directly in this issue, but because we are far away from. But I would like to ask you, as you told, there are several points, several dossiers that are blocked because of the Cyprus question. I'd like to ask you, how do you view the possible ways forward in this issue to unblock these dossiers? But I would like first, if you would allow me, to give the floor to my colleagues so that you could answer together two or three questions. So, Mr. Vitalino Canas, okay, please, the floor is yours.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Reitero o agradecimento pela presença do Sr. Ministro. I will speak in Portuguese, if you don't mind. Eu tinha aqui três questões que colocarei com rapidez, uma vez que temos tempo limitado nesta reunião, mas queria começar por referir que, de facto, em Portugal encontrará um grande apoio nos partidos políticos principais à adesão da Turquia à União Europeia e, naturalmente, que o partido a que pertence, o Partido Socialista, mantém esse apoio. Referiu uma crescente desilusão na opinião pública dos cidadãos turcos em relação ao processo de adesão. Devo dizer-lhe que essa desilusão é uma desilusão que existe hoje em dia na Europa, também crescente ao nível dos nossos próprios cidadãos, uma vez que estamos no meio de uma crise e muita gente sente ou entende que a Europa não tem respondido adequadamente a essa crise. E, portanto, todos os indicadores vão mostrando que há índices de desilusão ou de sintonia em relação à União Europeia, também dentro das nossas próprias sociedades. Mas estou confiante que isso poderá ser ultrapassado na Europa, na União Europeia, também na Turquia, e que iremos chegar a um momento em que a Turquia será membro de pleno direito da União Europeia. As questões que tenho a colocar são três, falo-ei de forma sintética. Primeiro, a questão da NATO. O Sr. Ministro, para além de ser Ministro da Área dos Assuntos Europeus, foi também membro da Assembleia Parlamentar da NATO, a que eu também pertenço, aliás, e gostaria de lhe perguntar de que forma é que acha que seria possível nós podermos ultrapassar alguns obstáculos que existem de plena cooperação ou de plena articulação entre a NATO e as estruturas da política comum de segurança e defesa ao nível da União Europeia. Sentimos que essas estruturas continuam a funcionar demasiado afastadas, divorciadas uma da outra. E aparentemente um dos fatores que impedem uma maior articulação é o facto de a Turquia ser membro da NATO, mas não ser membro da União Europeia. De que forma é que nós podemos ultrapassar essa dificuldade? Depois já foi colocado pelo Sr. Presidente a questão de Chipre. Aliás, três pessoas que estão aqui à roda da mesa estiveram há pouco tempo em Chipre na primeira reunião sobre política externa e de segurança comum, e um dos temas de que ouvimos falar com alguma frequência foi justamente do impasse que existe na negociação sobre a questão de Chipre, um impasse que existe entre a Turquia ou as autoridades turcas e as autoridades cipriotas. Havia há um ou dois anos atrás alguma expectativa de que isso pudesse vir a evoluir, mas aparentemente não está a evoluir. Gostava de ter a sua perspectiva atualizada sobre esse tema. Terceira questão, que também referiu na sua intervenção, o papel da Turquia ao nível do Médio Oriente. Falou da visita do Presidente Erdogan, do Primeiro-Ministro Erdogan, ao Egito. Da última vez que estive na Turquia, senti que havia uma certa, preocupação da parte da Turquia de se manter no máximo afastado da evolução política que está a verificar-se no Egito. Olhando para o mapa, sabemos que naquela região há dois países que verdadeiramente contam, que são a Turquia e o Egito, mas senti que a Turquia não queria ter um papel muito intenso ao nível da evolução política no Egito, que continua a ser uma evolução política complexa. O Egito continua a não ter Constituição, temos agora um presidente eleito que aparentemente concentra quase todos os poderes, algo que os egípcios quiseram evitar quando fizeram a revolução há um ano e tal atrás. Gostava de saber também a perspectiva que a Turquia neste momento tem em relação à evolução política no Egito. Muito obrigado.
Muito obrigado. Mr. Minister, if we would group two more questions from PSD and from CDS. From PSD, Sr. Deputado João Lobo, tem a palavra.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. De novo reitero a presença e os agradecimentos pela presença do Sr. Ministro. Eu tenho uma pergunta concreta para efetuar, mas permita-se-me que brevemente faça uma pequenina digressão que justifica o convencimento na adesão por parte do grupo parlamentar a que pertenço relativamente à Turquia. Nós não podemos esquecer que a União Europeia exige da Turquia o cumprimento do acervo comunitário. Mas eu julgo que, previamente ao acervo comunitário, nós somos tributários do acervo civilizacional. Quando se fala do Egito, não posso perder de vista que o primeiro tratado de caráter internacional que eu conheço foi justamente celebrado entre o rei de Mitanni e o faraó Tutmés IV. E, portanto, esta longa marcha civilizacional que nos une há mais de 3.500 anos não pode ser deixada relevante para exacerbar este acervo civilizacional. E também, uma vez que a União Europeia se estabelece com base numa comunidade de interesses, sim, muito obrigado. Com base numa comunidade de interesses, julgo que a Europa tem hoje um pilar fundamental na Turquia. Desde 1945, com a adesão às Nações Unidas, desde 1949 ao Conselho da Europa, desde 1952 à NATO. E julgo que a Ásia na Europa comunitária é um valor fundamental da realização dos fins que a Europa comunitária prossegue. E gostaria também de dizer que a base, a consciência comum do europeu não deixa de palpitar na Turquia. Porque quando nós falamos na civilização judaico-cristã, não podemos perder de vista a Turquia. Os gálatas, os celtas, a Éfeso, o cristianismo, tudo isso faz a Ilíada e a colina de Sarlik, que não existiria se não existisse a Turquia. A Odisseia não existiria se a Turquia não tivesse existido. Troia. E, por conseguinte, é esta marcha comum, esta consciência comum, civilizacional, que nos une e que é tributária do nosso reconhecimento. A pergunta concreta que eu queria deixar ao Sr. Ministro é a seguinte. No dia 12 de setembro, o Sr. Presidente da Comissão Europeia escreveu uma carta ao Parlamento Europeu referindo que a Europa deveria caminhar para uma federação de Estados-nação. À luz deste entendimento e no cumprimento do desígnio de integração, como é que a Turquia considera uma federação de Estados-nação no âmbito da União Europeia? Muito obrigado, Sr. Ministro. Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Pelo CDS-PP, Sr. Deputado João Serpa Oliva.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Sr. Ministro. A questão, enfim, já algumas que foram colocadas e, portanto, deixamos sempre numa posição um bocadinho ingrata, porque quem falou antes de mim já teve a oportunidade de falar dessas questões. Eu diria que a Turquia não é só importante pela zona onde se situa, mas é seguramente o Estado mais poderoso, democrático e secular do mundo muçulmano. A influência económica, política e diplomática difundiu-se desde o corredor mediterrâneo ao Médio Oriente. Mas este seu modo de vivendo tem apenas 10 anos, o que torna um tempo diminuto em termos de história. A questão que lhe colocava, e reconhecendo que a Turquia atravessa um período de relevância estratégica e geopolítica muito grande, é se considera este período sustentável. Porque na minha ótica será daqui que poderemos avançar ou não. Isto é, a questão fundamental é continuará o Partido da Justiça e do Desenvolvimento no poder, mantendo o modelo liberal e democrático que que vem seguindo até aqui, e de inspiração para o mundo islâmico, e que inspira efetivamente o mundo islâmico, porque se não se mantiver, que tipo de política externa será perseguida ou prosseguida por outros partidos? Isto é, refiro-me óbvio à oposição ao partido que se encontra no governo. E que tipo de relação continuará Ankara a desenvolver com a União Europeia, se isso viesse a acontecer? Vi referências relativamente ao documento estratégico que Vossa Excelência provavelmente preside, no processo de adesão da Turquia, com quatro pilares. O primeiro pilar diz respeito ao processo oficial de negociação, o segundo pilar visa renovar os compromissos, o terceiro pilar constitui a área concernente ao critério político, e há um quarto pilar, que é a dimensão da comunicação, que nos parece, de alguma forma, às vezes, que não tem sido dada a devida importância. Se a interna procura aumentar o apoio da opinião pública, obviamente que a externa o faz também. Foca-se nos países que guardam reservas em relação à adesão da Turquia. E a questão que lhe coloco é exatamente relativamente a este último pilar. Se o primeiro-ministro Erdogan tem demonstrado uma enorme capacidade de conquistar as opiniões públicas, quer interno, quer externamente, os movimentos populistas islâmicos tendem a desacreditar um pouco esta situação. Que balanço faz, efetivamente, desta estratégia e até que ponto nós, União Europeia, podemos estar confiantes no futuro de que continuarão a ser uma das maiores potências, a maior potência democrática do mundo islâmico, que saudamos vivamente e para o qual é fundamental, como sabe, Vossa Excelência, a possibilidade de adesão à União Europeia. Muito obrigado, Sr. Ministro.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Mr. Minister, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you for these questions and very sincere, friendly comments. And I'll try to be as sincere in my response as well. The first question which the President asked and also your colleagues asked about Cyprus. When my party was elected into office 10 years ago, Cyprus issue was already a very chronic issue in terms of Turkey's foreign policy. And we tried to bring a different approach. And we asked the Secretary General of United Nations to start a round of talks to solve the Cyprus problem. I was there when my Prime Minister asked Kofi Annan for the first time. It was January 2003. Kofi Annan's first response was, Mr. Prime Minister, and he was not even Prime Minister, he was the chairman of the ruling party of Turkey. Our current president, Mr. Gül, was Prime Minister at the time. He said, Mr. Chairman, I have tried solving Cyprus three times, and I've failed three times. I don't feel like failing for the fourth time. And my Prime Minister's response to him, Mr. Secretary General, I promise you, now that I'm in charge, Turkey and Turkish Cypriots would always be a step ahead of Greece and Greek Cypriots if you try to solve it. That sentence motivated the Secretary General, and he started a new round of talks. And in the preparation of the Annan peace plan, which was the idea to reunite the two states on the island, we, for the first time, gave authority, our sovereign rights, to a third party. Because when we were trying to negotiate the content of the Annan plan on issues that the sides could not agree, we proposed that the Secretary General should fill in the blanks. So on the issue of land, if we want 30% and they want to give us 25%, Kofi Annan would be able to decide in the plan what percent he would decide. And I was involved in the Bürgenstock talks in Switzerland where Turkey, Greece, Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots with EU, at that time Verhoeven was representing EU, and United States, Colin Powell was there. We spent a long time discussing on a plan. A plan came about because there were things we couldn't agree, and the Secretary General filled in the blanks, and it was something that no side was extremely happy with. But it was the best thing we could come up. And despite our difficulties with the text, we supported the plan. But the Greeks appeared president of the time, Papadopoulos, who had signed the plan, went back to the island and campaigned against it. So in the vote, in the Turkish Cypriots, 66% voted yes, and in the Greek Cypriots, 76% voted no. So the party that voted against EU's expectations, UN's expectations, US's expectations, and reunification was declined, and that party, a month later, became a full member of EU. But the other party, which worked in line with the EU expectations, was punished, and the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus is still facing embargoes. The EU Council, 2 days after that vote, decided on April 26, 2004, to put an end to isolation of Northern Cyprus. Just like many countries, including yours and mine, we do not recognize Taiwan, but we all trade with Taiwan. That was the idea that we, the international community, would do with Northern Cyprus. But 4 days after that, on May 1, when Greek Cypriots became a member, they blocked it. Now, there are 27 member states in EU today. Only one of them has direct trade with Northern Cyprus. Citizens of only one country can easily go back and forth to Northern Cyprus, and that single country, believe it or not, is Southern Cyprus. Greek Cypriots import and export, they go back and forth, they travel and they trade, but they would not allow Portuguese companies to do the same or Portuguese citizens to do the same. This is the biggest dilemma, the biggest oxymoron in the whole Cyprus issue. Since then, we have attempted starting new talks, and every time we made proposals, it's been declined. For the last 3 years, President Christofias, a new president of the Greek Cypriots, was in charge of the talks, and we supported consecutive Turkish Cypriot presidents to conduct the talks with him. And a few months ago, Mr. Christofias announced that he is leaving politics. So now they have elections next year, and whoever they elect, we will have to start from the scratch again. But this is hurting EU's interests, and I'll tell you how. Right now, in addition to the economic difficulties, EU has an upcoming energy crisis, which we all know, and EU needs to find new sources of energy and new routes of energy, because we don't want any country to monopolize energy sources and routes. Well, 70% of the energy resources that Europe needs, that your people need, are either to the south, north, or east of Turkey. Unless someone comes up with a new technology or wireless transfer of energy resources, Turkey's cooperation is a must. But here I am, not being able to open the chapter on energy in the EU negotiations, only because the Greek Cypriots have announced that they would veto the opening. So the interests of 26 other nations are being hijacked. And between us, if I was Russia's foreign minister, I would ask the country which launders my money to stop Turkey from opening the chapter. They are the only beneficial. They are the only advantageous party in this whole process. What I cannot understand is, while this is being organized, how come the 26 others are keeping quiet about it? Why they are not twisting the arm to say, look, we need Turkey to open that chapter because we want Turkey to be on our side? There are other options in front of Turkey as well. If I was Turkey's energy minister, if I cannot open the chapter on energy, then I cannot trust the European market. And I have to look to proposals coming from India, China, Russia, the Gulf, and look into my national interest too. It's only normal. And that is creating a difficulty for me as Turkey's chief negotiator, because I have a hard time convincing my other cabinet members, and when I ask them about a European interest, and they say, well, did you open that chapter? Is Europe serious about Turkey? And it's becoming very difficult. Same thing when you ask about the NATO-EU cooperation. Turkey has been a member of NATO for more than 60 years. We shed blood together in Korea, Kosovo, Somalia, Afghanistan, Bosnia, all awkward places in Lebanon. And yet, When it comes to European security and defense policies, Turkey cannot enter the meeting, cannot vote. I have the second largest military in NATO. I have troops all around the world in 32 countries within NATO operations. But when NATO is doing something with EU, I have to wait outside and let the Greek Cypriots tell me where my soldiers will die? Sorry, I cannot accept that. Either I'm at the table when the decision is being made, or I'm not at the battlefield getting killed. You would do the same. So how can we overcome this difficulty? And all the difficulties vis-a-vis Cyprus and NATO and all these issues, the easiest way is making Turkey a member. The day Turkey becomes a member, there's no more Cyprus problem, because then we're in the same union. It's one big federation of states in the process of becoming. It's going to take time. Between now and what Europe will become like United States is a long time, but that's the idea. The continental shelf problem between Turkey and Greece will also disappear, because the Aegean will be a EU sea, and you will have as much rights as I do in Turkey's shores. The airspace problem will disappear. The trade problem will disappear. The security problem will disappear. I mean, it's the easiest solution. To be honest, the biggest mistake was making Cyprus a member before Turkey. Turkey and Greece applied around the same period of time, back in 1959, and we should have become members together. And that would have resolved all of the problems. And that would really make the EU a peace project. Just like it stopped all the animosities between the Brits and the French, it would also put an end to all the questions in our part of the world. And that's the reason why we're still pushing for EU. Economically, to be honest, we don't need the EU. Last year we had 8% growth. Right now we have 8% unemployment. The year before we had 7% growth. We have a very good economy. We don't really need the EU economically, but we need the EU socially, culturally, and more importantly, for peace reasons. Because EU is a peace project. It's the cheapest insurance policy for every country. That's why we have to keep on this enlargement issue. In terms of Turkey's role in the Middle East, especially in Egypt, and the Turkish model of coexisting democracy and Islam, I think that's Turkey's most important contribution to the European Union. Today, Cathy Ashton cannot go to any Middle Eastern country and have the influence that Turkey has. But when Turkey becomes a member, when she goes there, she will have greater influence. And the people in the streets of Egypt or Tunisia or Libya or today in Syria, who are risking their lives to reform their country, if you really analyze what they want, why are they risking their lives? Why are they killing or getting killed? They want democracy. They want human rights. They want freedom of speech. They want to put an end to the dictators. They want better schools, hospitals, better jobs. They want labor unions. They want free media. They want to be like Turkey. Without giving up their cultural, religious lifestyles, they want to enjoy good things about life. So Turkey is not a model, but maybe a source of inspiration for them. But why is Turkey different than Syria or Libya? Because Turkey has democracy, and because Turkey is trying to become a member of EU, Turkey is constantly reforming herself. So every time someone like Sarkozy speaks against Turkey's aspirations to become a member of EU, they're actually hurting the interests or the dreams of the people in the streets of Benghazi or Cairo or Algiers as well. By supporting Turkey's membership, Europe would also give a very strong signal to those people, not only to those people in the Middle East, but people in Africa, in China, in India, who are trying to bring about more humanitarian standards to their countries. Because in the eyes of those 3 billion people, Europe right now is a Christian club. And we have to change that around. We have to prove to them that this is a club of values without reference to religion. Because in the Lisbon Treaty, in all of the EU documents, there is no reference to religion. And already in Europe, there is 10% Muslim population. And by the next 20 years, it's going to be 20%. So Islam is a reality in Europe, Turkey in or out. But what Turkey can do is change the whole approach. And for European security-wise, I want to remind you that when there was the attacks in Paris about young children turning the cars around, burning them, attacking the stores, it was about these Algerian and Moroccan immigrants. But none of them came from Morocco. They were all born in Paris. They grew up in Paris. They were all French citizens. The terrorist attack in London was not organized by Pakistanis, as it was portrayed. It was all children of Pakistani immigrants who were born in London, who are all British citizens, who received British education, but were exposed to wrong messages, the deadly messages of bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Even perpetrators of 9/11 did not go from Saudi Arabia to attack the World Trade Center. They spent years in Germany, received university education, learned how to use airplanes, and then they became terrorists because they were exposed to wrong messages. So Europe has to decide, do we want 30 million Muslim people in Europe already? Do we want their kids to be exposed to bin Laden's messages or Erdogan's messages, who's trying to promote democracy and human rights and secularism? That's why Turkey's membership is so important. And I think we understand our role, that we have a huge responsibility. But the question is, do you understand our role? Does Europe understand what Turkey can do and what Turkey cannot do? Do you understand what you are doing when you are pushing Turkey away? Not you personally, not your country, but people like Wilders in Netherlands, people like Sarkozy in France, people like Angela Merkel in Germany. Every time they push Turkey away, they're building new walls in their own countries. And that's the logic that we all have to deal with. And this economic crisis does not help, because people fear that they might lose their jobs because someone from Turkey or someone from Romania or someone from Macedonia or even Iceland can come and take their job away. So everyone is very sensitive about enlargement. But enlargement is the only solution, because with the current market of EU, this is where you can go. Only through enlargement you can enlarge the pie. And if the pie gets bigger, the slices get bigger too. And I think that's why we need a new psychology, a new approach of interpreting the situation. Thank you for listening to me.
Have you finished, Mr. Minister?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the federation question, of course, it's a big debate. I mean, if the 27, soon to be 28, agree, whatever the agreement is, Turkey will be behind it. But what I think personally, I think the problem right now, a German who works 65 hours a week doesn't want to pay the bills of a Greek who pretends to work 25 hours a week. But through time, people even in one part of Portugal would not want to finance the other people in different part of Portugal either. I think we need to regionalize economic decisions and centralize security decisions. And Europe has to change its policy of unanimity. In a committee of 15 people, you cannot agree on everything. How can 28 countries agree on everything? When you demand unanimity, you start looking the other way to each other's shortcomings, and then you have a big bubble, which turns into an economic crisis. So I think we need to change the structures. If we want EU to be like United States, in the United States, the gap of income between one state to another state is not more than 2%. But in EU, it's not the case. You cannot claim that France and Romania have same standards.
Minister, I thank you for your words. We have a debate with the Prime Minister of Portugal now at starting at 10 o'clock, so we are
good
a
luck.
Little bit limited.
He's a nice guy, be nice to him.
I would like to tell you it was a pleasure for us to have this meeting, to hear your views, not only on the positions of Turkey towards the European Union, but also on the European Union. This, in my view, confirms that the integration and the dialogue and the adhesion of Turkey would be an enrichment to the European Union. So I thank you for this opportunity and wish you a good stay in Lisbon and good luck for the negotiations. Thank you. I've